Good afternoon, listeners. Your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, here on American Warrior Radio. In the early 1800s, Britain and France were at war. Britain adopted the tactic of trying to damage France's economy by restricting trade between France and the newly independent United States. The U.S. Congress and President Thomas Jefferson responded with the Embargo Act of 1807, which limited trade with Canada, then still a British colony. Many residents of New York's Champlain Valley relied heavily on trade with their Canadian neighbors, and angered by the embargo, resorted to smuggling, particularly potash. By horse and pack mule, they carried potash to Canada, where it was then smuggled on to England. One of the main routes was via Lake Champlain. In August of 1808, the revenue cutter Fly was enforcing the embargo on Lake Champlain, and they got a lead on a smuggling boat called the Black Snake. Now, the boat was called the Black Snake because they painted its hull with black tar to keep it from being seen at night. On August 4th, Lieutenant Daniel Farrington took 13 crew members and recruits up the Wenatchee River to search for the smugglers. He found the Black Snake beached, and after placing some of his crew on the Black Snake, continued on downriver with both ships. Moving along the shore, the smugglers opened fire. They shot at the Fly, killing the helmsman, Ellis Drake. Farrington put a party ashore to capture the smugglers and walked right into an ambush. Farrington was wounded, and two of his party were killed, crew member Asa March and farmer Jonathan Ornsby, a member of the Vermont Militia. The incident came to be known as the Black Snake Affair, and a song was even written about it. Ellis Drake and Asa March would become the first custom officers to die in line of duty, performing as members of the Marine Patrol. Welcome to American Warrior, ladies and gentlemen. The United States has 7,500 miles of land borders with Mexico and Canada. Add to that 95,000 miles of shoreline and 182 international airports. 11 million cargo containers arrive at our seaports every year, another 10 million by truck and 3 million by rail. In 2015, the estimated retail value of counterfeit goods seized was $1.3 billion. Today, we're going to continue our discussion with the men and women of our nation's largest law enforcement agency, their mission to protect our nation from threats seen and unseen. And to join us first, we've got Teresa Small.
Good morning, Ben. Thank you for the invite.
With Customs and Border Protection. I got that wrong last time, listener, so I want to make sure I got it right this time.
Excellent job. So I'd like to sincerely thank you and those who serve and have served in the armed forces. We are here today to welcome and encourage those in any of the military branches to apply for U.S. Customs and Border Protection so they can take advantage of the hiring preference, and we are simply a great fit for them. Those with military experience, we have found, have special skill sets that are helpful to our overall mission of protecting our nation's borders. For those who are unaware, U.S. Customs and Border Protection is a small umbrella of the Department of Homeland Security, also known as DHS. U.S. Customs and Border Protection is a law enforcement arm of the federal government, and we have three components under this umbrella. One of the components is our U.S. Border Patrol, who is comprised of agents that patrol in between the ports of entry, and they wear a green uniform. Second, we have our Air and Marine Operations, and based on their name, describes what they do, which does require a special skill set, which we can talk about later, and they wear a tan uniform. And the third component is the Office of Field Operations, which is responsible for both trade and travel, which you spoke of just earlier, at the ports of entry within the U.S., and also we have officers assigned around the world. And I happen to represent the Office of Field Operations, those of us that wear a blue uniform, and I'm extremely proud to be part of the U.S. Customs and Border Protection family. But today we have representatives of each of our components here in the studio, and we will gladly explain further on how those in the military can benefit by joining U.S. Customs and Border Protection.
You know, Teresa, we had a similar group on several months ago. I wanted to do a show about, you know, most of our focus is about the men and women of the military who protect our interests mostly overseas. But given the state of the world the last couple of years, said, wait a minute, not only are you our nation's largest law enforcement agency, but you're protecting our borders. And in today's world, that is so important. So our first show, we focused on Border Patrol and yourselves, the customs part of it. Today we're going to focus on Air and Marine Operations. You did grant me the extraordinary honor of going out on patrol with both the ground units and the air units as well, so we'll talk a little bit about that. So let me bring in our brown guest today, representing the Air and Marine Operations Unit, Keith Kincannon. Keith, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
Thank you very much, Ben. I'm really glad to be here and talk about Air and Marine Operations, especially here at the Tucson Air Branch.
Now, you are a veteran. Teresa mentioned both you and Agent Pock were veterans. Teresa, I don't think you served, did you? Or
that is correct.
Okay. So you're a veteran of a little-known branch called the...
A small fighting force known as the U.S. Marine Corps.
Now, you just celebrated your birthday, didn't you?
We did. Thanks for remembering.
Well, happy birthday.
We don't look 241.
Well, you certainly don't look 241. Now, I don't know, you know, Keith, if they briefed you coming in. To some extent, your history, the history of your division goes all the way back to 1789 when the U.S. first had vessels to patrol the coastal areas to look out for smuggling and contraband in the U.S. 1922, Customs Patrol Service started using seized aircraft for aerial surveillance. And just so our listeners get that in context, I mean, aircraft were still relatively new in that time. And then in 1932, a record 35 aircraft were seized by smugglers, established the official Customs Border Patrol Air Group. Much of the efforts focused on the southern U.S. border, which is where we are now.
It's a fascinating history. A lot of people, especially my own extended family, have trouble understanding the who's who and the relative age of our agency. We've only been around since 2003 when Homeland Security, that mm-hmm. department, was invented. So, yes, you're referring to the U.S. Customs Service of 1789, which by that name no longer exists. But the mission obviously does continue, and now we've integrated into these three subsets that Teresa described. And the air and marine part, of course, that means airplanes and boats. Those are the tools that we use to defend the border and our maritime security.
Well, and Teresa, feel free to jump in here, because I want to clarify that, I mean, the individual components of what you all do have been around for a long time, but it was after the September 11th attacks when we started taking a new look at Homeland Security when all this integration started to take place, correct?
Absolutely. The government as a whole had looked at what the agencies actually do to see what we were going to be able to benefit our country in protecting it. And so in doing so, they came up with DHS, and since then we are now that smaller umbrella that we discussed earlier.
Okay, super. Ladies and gentlemen, again, it's your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, here on American Warrior Radio. We're talking with Customs and Border Protection. We're focusing today on the air and marine operations. We do have Border Patrol and Customs with us as well. Now, because we've got so many guests and a lot to cover, we're not going to be taking phone calls today. My apologies. But stick around. Great show coming up. We'll be right back.
Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking about the men and women who protect our nation's borders and ports, Customs and Border Protection today. We're focusing on the Air and Marine Operations Unit. We're joined by Keith Kincannon, who is a pilot with, as they call themselves, the Brown here in Tucson. And Keith, again, you are a Marine veteran, and you still serve in the reserves, correct?
Yes, thanks very much.
And you fly fixed wing or rotor?
Personally, I'm a dual-rated pilot, so that just means I have my FAA certification to fly both helicopters and fixed-wing airplanes.
Now, nationwide, Teresa will jump in and correct me, because that's what she does, in Air and Marine, approximately 1,600 to 1,800 agents or personnel just for that division, and what I found, about 240 aircraft and 300 Marine vessels. Now, we don't see a lot of the Marine operations here in Arizona, I'm guessing.
Probably not here in southern Arizona.
You guys don't have a boat that goes up and down the Colorado by Yuma?
You wouldn't see that, but you certainly would see it if you go a little bit further to our San Diego Air Branch at North Island.
Now, you've got four broad categories, as I understand it, that the Air and Marine operations function under: interdiction, investigation, domain awareness, and contingency operations, national tasking missions. Let's talk about the interdiction mission first. Well, you're the one that does it on a daily basis. What is the average day for, well, there is no average day. What does a day look like for you generally?
Well, you're on the right track there, and that's one of the best parts about why I took this job in the first place is because it's different all the time. From one day to the next, I'll fly a helicopter. Then the next day, I'll fly in an airplane. On the third day, we might do reports. And the fourth day, we'll go out to the firing range and qualify on our pistols and rifles. So it's a great variety of work from day to day.
You know, I mentioned, Keith, earlier that I was given the honor of going out on a fly-along with one of your units. And I've done ride-alongs with the Tucson Police Department as well, and that was an interesting distinction for me as a civilian right off the bat, was generally TPD, they don't want to land. I mean, it's got to be a pretty dire situation before that helicopter comes down on the ground and an officer exits the aircraft. But it sounds like the way you're describing, it's maybe not all that uncommon, or is it?
Well, as a matter of fact, every day we have our UH-60 Blackhawk, which is our main aircraft for, we call it medium enforcement helicopter. That has a team of a tactical team in the back. It can be an agent just like me, maybe a pilot, maybe one of our, what we call our air enforcement agents. And they're our experts on our small unit tactics when we do deploy out of the aircraft, and it could be any day that they do that.
Now, when I went along, I think the aircraft we were in was an Airbus of some sort, helicopter.
It is. It's called Airbus, and that's confusing. It used to be called American Eurocopter, but it is a small helicopter, one of the most successful rotary-wing aircraft you'll see in the world, super dependable, and that's our real workhorse for patrols.
Now, while I was out, we did have I had an opportunity to observe an interdiction taking place. Now, obviously, because we weren't officially on patrol because they had, you know, me along, wasting fuel. But I think it was what normally worked is this aircraft, the smaller aircraft, was flying, would normally be flying sort of observation or looking for the bad guys, whereas the Blackhawks were coming in to actually potentially interdict. And then we'll also get to green here because then there was also some agents on the ground at the time. So really you had a couple of levels of activity going on.
And the missions of those different aircraft and their capabilities are distinct, and yet they do overlap somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to integrating with our friends in green, that's where a military background isn't necessary, but it certainly is useful. Because I already have that correct mindset of supporting the guys on the ground and making sure that they get the mission done, but most importantly, that they stay safe.
Oh, and that was definitely key. I tell you... And the reason I wanted to do this, and part of the whole mission of this show, is to inform civilians like myself who haven't been there, done that, who are not out there. And I did go out with Agent Pacquan right along on the ground along the border out of the Nogales. And then, like I said, with your air unit, we went much further west out towards the reservation. And that is some barren, barren country out there. And I have to say, as a citizen also, basically, we're talking a barbed wire fence. I mean, out there in the middle of the reservation. So there is, well, and that's where this situation, this interdiction was taking place, was on just off the reservation there. So it was, I've got so much respect for you all because there was at least two agents on the ground. I think one was a canine unit. And from the air, I'm just thinking, man, it's hot, it's dirty, and you're looking for bad guys.
Well, I have to interject that I started this career 10 years ago, moved here from Florida, which was basically a mission to Mars. I had never been out to southern Arizona before, and what really struck me is what you just remarked about, and that is as soon as you leave the city limits of Tucson, you are in desolate, barren, dangerous territory.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate that so many folks find themselves out there with no resources, water, in super hot weather, and can get lost from time to time. And that's where the other aspect of what our Border Patrol friends as well as us do is to assist those who find themselves in a place that, well, they shouldn't be.
And I'm glad you brought that up because when we bring Agent Paco on, I'd like to talk about that because so often, again, from a civilian perspective, I think they overlook, well, I know they overlook the compassionate side of what you all do. I mean, you're out there saving lives. And bottom line.
Well, make no mistake, we're not emergency medical services. Mm-hmm. Our first priority is national defense, national security, and that means law enforcement. So that means the safety of our agents, number one. We're looking out for U.S. citizens. But of course, if people are in physical distress, you know, we're a kind nation. We take that role very seriously. And at that point, if it's a medical emergency, it doesn't matter whether you're a criminal alien or a smuggler or a U.S. citizen. That's beside the point.
Now, what other aircraft? I mentioned the UH-60, but also what other you fly fixed wing aircraft here as well?
Yes, sir. We have two different kinds of fixed wing airplanes here at the Tucson branch. And keep in mind, Tucson, as you might imagine, is our largest air branch in the whole country. We have about 45 different locations throughout the U.S., but most of them here in the Southwest. The Citation is one of our other aircraft, which we fly a few of those. That's our air interceptor. And a lot of people are surprised that we fly basically a modified business jet as our air interceptor aircraft. And it also serves as an airborne platform to observe things on the ground. One thing we'll be using that for in a couple of months is for national special security events. And we do that every year at the Super Bowl. So we'll be there in February.
Very cool. Now, you also have some other assets. I don't know, as we mentioned, we don't get a lot of marine assets used here in Tucson, but I just saw just a couple days ago the air unit working with the marine unit interdicted something like 300 pounds of cocaine just off of Puerto Rico. That sounds like a lot to me, but I'm guessing in the overall scheme of things of what you all are doing, that's
a day in the life for the guys in the Caribbean Air Branch, as they call themselves in Puerto Rico. And so in the southeast region, those are one of our major branches there is in Puerto Rico. They do a lot of great work. And that's one of the locations where our new agents get stationed, because they get their feet wet doing
literally
hard work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, as well as the rest of the southeast region, where they work hand in hand with both the air and the marine side.
Now, Keith, we got just about a minute left. Every show Ben gets to ask a couple of dumb questions, and if you won't or can't answer this, let me know. Does the Customs and Border Protection also operate any unmanned aerial vehicles?
Yes, of course, they certainly do. That's another asset that we operate. Our separate air unit that's in Sierra Vista down at the Fort Huachuca Army Airfield. We operate the Predator, the UAV Predator. Now, it's not armed, but and it's meant to patrol the border and looking for smugglers and illegal aliens.
Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Ben Bueller-Garcia. We're talking with Customs and Border Protection. You can find out more. Visit cbp.gov/careers. Great opportunities, particularly for members of the military. We'll be right back.
Who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Your host, Ben Bueller-Garcia. We're talking with Customs and Border Protection today with a special focus, or we have had a special focus on the air and marine operations. We're going to roll in another guest here. You've heard him on the last show, Agent Vicente Paco, who is with the green section of the organization, and it's okay to call you Border Patrol?
Yes, sir. It
okay.
Is. How you
I
doing,
checking.
Ben?
Ladies and gentlemen, I've got three armed people here, and as you may or may not know, I had some immigration issues myself, so I just want to be very, very, very careful here. So, Paco, welcome back to American Warrior Radio.
Hey, thanks for having us, Ben. You know, it's a great opportunity to come out here and talk about what our agents do, and you know, talk about our recruitment efforts that we're doing through this radio show.
Well, I mentioned off the air, I was at a fundraising event, and the intern that I was working with was a young lady who's studying criminal justice at the U of A. She's early in her career, I think freshman, sophomore. She wanted to be a police officer, so I mentioned Customs and Border Protection as an option. She never crossed her mind. Mm-hmm. And then when I talked about the benefits and the potential salary that
right.
she could earn, literally her eyes got as big as plates. So, I mean, it's not, now don't get me wrong, there's not enough money in the world to pay me to do what you all do. And I mean that, you know, fully with all due respect. But on average, these careers are great careers, correct?
Right. So one of the things that the agency does is we've increased our pay over the years. I mean, from talking to guys that were here a while back to the guys now, you know, like myself, we're very well rewarded by our salary. You know, one of the things that I mentioned before and I'll mention again is that, you know, we have a very rewarding career, but it's also very challenging. You know, some of the jobs that we do, especially in the United States Border Patrol, is we often patrol in areas of the desert where we're out there by ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one agent. You know, we're not riding in doubles like many local law enforcement agencies do. And our resources and support is limited. You know, I patrol in the Border Patrol station out in Ajo, Arizona. That's the original station that I'm assigned to. And, you know, I've been in some situations out there where my backup was 2 hours away and I needed to make an interdiction. You know, air support is a great asset to have, but in those remote locations, sometimes, you know, I know we're right at the seam between the Tucson Air Branch and the Yuma Air Branch, so sometimes we get support from both sides. But in the middle of the night, sometimes we are the only ones out there protecting America.
Wow. That literally gives me chills thinking about that. And I have to relate back to when I did the ride along with you. We, obviously we're not, probably shouldn't get into details, but came across a situation that, I mean, I hadn't been in your vehicle maybe 30 minutes and, right away, right there, right just inside the border, you know, five people. And it was just going like that all day long, it seems like, whether it was in the urban section, you know, down in Nogales proper, mm-hmm. or even out along the fence. And I can imagine this is just Arizona. You know, you've got Texas, you've got the sea lanes that we're talking about, northern right. border, Canada, and of course the ports as well and the airport. So I'm glad that you are on the job, and I'm glad there's some sharp people like the three I've got here in the studio, because that makes me honestly sleep better at night.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we do is we do that. We're here to protect the American public. You know, we're at the front lines pretty much in the outline of the United States. And, you know, working with our partners and sharing information, you know, it's a great job to do. You know, I've done it for about 6.5 years. And, you know, it's every day we come in, it's something different. You know, we might be you know, in an urban environment in some locations, and you know, 5-minute drive takes us out to a remote location outside of Nogales, like you and I experienced that day. You know, one of the things that we see out there too is here in Arizona, in the Border Patrol, we're not only seeing illegal immigration being, you know, one of our challenges, but also the smuggling of contraband.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're often leading the nation in narcotic seizures, particularly marijuana here in the Tucson Sector Border Patrol. You know, just a couple of days ago, we had a group of 35 drug smugglers that were interdicted by Border Patrol agents with the assistance of Air Marine Operations.
35 in one group?
35 in one group over, you know, 1,100 pounds of narcotics.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I mean, that is something that we see, you know, day to day. You know, our partners in tan uniforms got there as soon as the camera operator identified it. We had agents that moved in simultaneously with the assistance of AMO, and, you know, they were able to deter those individuals back into Mexico. They dropped their contraband, and, you know, that is what we do every day.
Well, now, Keith, in Marine terms, 35 Marines would be what, a squad or what?
Okay, that'd be a platoon, I suppose.
A platoon? Well, no, I mean, literally, this is an invasion. I mean, in this case, I mean, holy smokes. Let's talk a little about, Keith, you referred to there may be some instances when some of your larger helicopters are going up with personnel in the back, if you will. Those are Border Patrol agents. That's, so it's brown flying green, right?
It's that also, but we have our own crew members that ride in the back of the Hawk, the Black Hawk that we call it. But often we have special operations Border Patrol agents on board with us. They're called BORTAC and BORSTAR. And what they do is they have special tactics and medical training. And one of the great operations that we've been focusing on this year is not just finding those folks at the border, like a group of 35, mm-hmm. but the ones that have infiltrated the interior of our state,
right.
the drug trafficking organization scouts, the ones that hang up on the top of hills and are essentially helping those those smugglers get mm-hmm. through when they think that we're not watching.
Exactly.
We've made a lot of key interdictions with them and really put the hurt on those DTOs.
Yeah, I tell you, one of the things that I enjoy, because I love to fly, but when I was up with your personnel on patrol, you know, we're getting real close to these mountains and tops and these peaks that kind of jut up out of the sky islands that jut up out of the Sonoran Desert. On the top of one of these peaks, and the only way you could get there is by helicopter or by foot, I think, or maybe by mule, there was a refrigerator sitting on one of these peaks. Now, obviously, it didn't have electricity, but it just, I mean, somebody got that up there.
Well, one of the things that these scouts do is they take solar panels out there and battery. You know, they develop campsites. The Tucson sector has made it one of its priorities to take these cartel scouts out of the you know, mountaintops and eliminating them as a threat. They're one of the most challenging aspects that the Border Patrol agents and Air Marine agents also see, because they're monitoring their activity. Think about it like playing a chess match. You know, they're countering mm-hmm. our enforcement actions because they're monitoring. They're relaying that to the drug mules or the smugglers on the ground to avoid detection, you know, and obtaining and having that collaborative effort between both agencies to take these guys out. Yeah, you know, it's a great opportunity because it's taking the ice out of their operation. And you know, I was one of the ones that was on the first case. So before these scouts were able to walk away saying that they were just illegally present. Now we have precedents. We have case law that supports a criminal prosecution on those individuals involved in conspiracy smuggling. And, you know, I went to court to testify on that first case, and it became case law. Mm-hmm. So now we have, you know, a process of taking these guys out.
Okay. Now, Paco, this made such a big impression on me when I was out with you and we encountered this group of individuals. They were in pretty bad shape. Mm-hmm. And they'd gone a long ways, and I, as a human being, the compassion I felt for these folks was very strong. But at the end of the day, they were inside our border; they were there illegally,
right?
And so obviously, you had to take enforcement action. Keith, coming back to you, some of the role that AMO performs is also, you mentioned the Super Bowl, but do you engage also in natural disasters? I mean, you're doing rescues, or, you know, Hurricane Katrina, those sorts of things as well?
As a matter of fact, in recent events for Hurricane Matthew, we mm-hmm. provided a response. We flew our UH-60 Blackhawks all the way across the country in order to render rescue support for the other agencies and FEMA on the East Coast. So, absolutely, we always have that contingency available.
Now, who is the command structure, who makes the director of Homeland Security makes those decisions, or does the president say, hey, fly this helicopter there, or how does that work?
Well, because our agency is part of the Department of Homeland Security, we're already part of that command structure, which is not to be confused with the Defense Department. Mm-hmm. They do support to civil authorities. We're already a civil authority, so all we have to be asked is from that state or that local authority to the feds. They ask for resources, and we provide them.
Okay, wonderful. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Customs and Border Protection here today. If you have some questions, you can check out cbp.gov/careers. Listen, you're great men and women that are doing this job. If you're a veteran or a member of the military and thinking about a different career, we're going to talk a little bit about that more here when we come back. Stick around, folks.
If you want to discuss those who serve the red, white, and blue, dial 520-751-1041. Now, back to the American Warrior.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking Customs and Border Protection. We've got one more segment left, and let me just share some data with you. This is for fiscal year 2015. In 2015, Air and Marine Operations disrupted 230,000 pounds of cocaine, 719,000 pounds of marijuana, 1,427 weapons, $49.3 million in cash, 4,485 arrests, and 51,130 apprehensions. Teresa, I think that's also important to emphasize that you and your fellow agents are not only protecting things coming into the U.S. Did I get that wrong again? Are you not an agent? You're an officer?
Correct, Ben. Thank you for correcting that once again.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Live radio, you got to love it. You're also helping reduce the amount of things that flow out of the country. I mentioned that the weapons. There's bad guys come in with the drugs, but then the cash is flowing out again. And I'm guessing, particularly in the Nogales sector, we also have an issue of weapons flowing from the U.S. into Mexico.
Absolutely. This is something that does not escape the area of Nogales. So, for example, just the other day, this isn't necessarily weapons, but our officers do a very fine job at what they do. And we had a cargo shipment of watermelons that was also laden with more than 20 pounds of heroin in the reefer unit of the tractor trailer. So that was a pretty significant seizure, and our officers are very well trained in basically locating these things when these drug cartels have some very sophisticated type of concealment methods. But one thing that we want to just make sure that those who are already eligible veterans or are separating from the service soon, that they take advantage of this application process, because we've actually reduced the wait time for them as far as this particular process is concerned. And it now takes 6 months as compared to 12 plus months for your regular civilians.
Okay, so the young lady I was talking about, who's a criminal justice major, she's looking at 12 months. But if you have prior military service, that's almost cut in half.
Correct.
And how long? I mean, if I was in a year, 2 years, is there a limit there? I mean, do they need a minimum amount of service before they qualify for this?
Well, there is an eligibility requirement, and actually we'll have Agent Paco go through that. But just to give them some ideas, ideally would be for them to refer to the website, because it does pretty much spell out everything for them there. And it's cbp.gov, and for them to visit the veterans page specifically is going to help them tremendously. But Agent Paco can actually give the specifics as to the requirements.
Now Paco, the one thing I want to be sure to mention, too, the pilot I flew with Aaron Marine, was an Army veteran. He hadn't completed his full 20 years to get his Army retirement, but he was able to gain, by joining Homeland Security, Customs, and Border Protection, basically that he was able to get a lot of details, but basically he was to be able to get credit for that. So
that
just continued on for he and his family.
So one of the things that is beneficial, having, those 4 years that most people serve in the U.S. forces, or maybe even more than that, and for some reason, they felt the need to get out of the service. Those years can't go to waste, because one of the things that the agency does for us here is in a way you can petition for those years to be accounted, not one for 1 year so you can retire. You still have to do 20 years minimum, and at the age of 50 you qualify for retirement. But then let's say, for example, myself, I came in when I was 28. I'm going to retire when I'm 50 with 23 years in. By buying my military time, I'll be retiring like if I did 25 years in.
And that brings up another good point, because I'm out there working for you with the military. Telling folks. Now, when I did the ride-along, I asked if, I'm a criminal justice major, and I asked if you would hire me, and you said no. But it wasn't because I'm old and, it wasn't because I was fat.
No.
But there is a age limit, correct?
Right.
But is there an extension if you're military?
So there are waivers that, that individuals can apply for, as, many of them that do 20 years, they come in at 20 and then you do 20 or 40. Mm-hmm. There are waivers that you can apply for to go through the hiring process. And I have a couple of classmates that actually came in when they were 40, 41, so they're going past the requirement, but they came in with waivers. And it's a great benefit to have, a degree also. The minimum requirements is that individual has to be 18 years old. They have to have a clean background, be a U.S. citizen, have resided in the U.S. for at least 2 years recently. There's different things. There's a residency requirement also for military personnel that have lived overseas. Mm-hmm. There's also a waiver for that. Officer Small said, visiting the cbp.gov, there's full of information. Also usajobs.gov, that is another great site for applicants that want to work for the federal government, and that's where they can find some of the listings within the agency. Another thing too that the agency also does, and I'll probably throw this in there, there's a lot of positions also outside of law enforcement within the agency. We have a lot of support personnel that without those individuals, such as human resources, accounting, logistics, there's different positions within, CBP that individuals can apply, and all those applications can be found at USA jobs.gov.
Now, for those, I'm glad you brought that up. For those types of support positions, they don't have to go through, I mean, they still have to do the background check and
right.
obviously all that stuff, but they're not necessarily going through an academy.
An academy,
they're,
no.
Okay.
Yeah, so every agent, and every agency has a different type of academy. Our academy lasts five months now. You know, it's everybody that goes through our academy is going to receive some sort of, basic Spanish, you know, everybody mm-hmm. that's going to graduate is not going to be conversational, but at least they're going to know what it takes to do the job.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because someone like Keith, obviously, he's coming in with a very specialized skill. He's a pilot,
right.
both fixed wing and helicopter. So I'm guessing there are those kinds of demands where you're really looking for specialized people.
Exactly.
But also, I was very surprised when I was out with you that the amount of training that CVP does provide. For example, you were out there literally like the old cowboys tracking
footprints
through the desert, and that's
right.
training that you provide
right.
to everybody.
And that is a skill set that is basically trained at the academy, but experience is what brings that that keen in on looking for that footprints in the desert and things like that. And some of our pilots can actually look at footprints from the air. We have some pilots that have had Border Patrol experience that have, you know, transferred over to AMO. And, it's a very amazing skill to have.
Wow, that's very cool. Something else I want to, you know, we talk about because we happen to be in Tucson, but the broadcast is going nationwide. It's going international. The opportunities for your agencies aren't limited to domestically. You've got positions where folks can serve internationally as well, correct?
Absolutely, and I can probably speak more so on the Office of Field Operations side. We do have several of those positions who are essentially overseas. Typically, they're not going to be assignments, so when one first starts with the agency, mm-hmm. but it's certainly something that they can work towards because those positions or those assignments are very sought after.
Now, Keith, the pilot I flew with, he was, I can't remember where, he wasn't a Tucsonan. But he came here, like Tucson, this is where he wanted to settle his family, kids are going to school, and he was very grateful because unlike the military, now he had a stable location for himself and his family. You came out here all the way from Florida. Is that, how important was that transferring from the military to you know, civilian, if you will, government service? How important was that, that consistency for you and your family?
Oh, that was so huge for me, Ben. After serving over 12 years of active duty in the armed forces, I wanted to live in a place where I wasn't going to be forced to move after a short amount of time. But that being said, CBP offers amazing flexibility if you do want to transfer from one place to another, something that you might not be able to do in local law enforcement, of course. I just spent last week in Washington, D.C. at our headquarters, which was really interesting. Then I come back this week and do field operations. If you want to move from one region to the next, you can promote, you can transfer, you can change skills. There's quite a bit of flexibility for those who want to stay put as well as those who want to move around.
I wish I'd met you guys 20 years ago. I'd have a different career. I wouldn't be, you know, schlepping radio out here. So we've got about 30 seconds. Who wants to wrap it up? Teresa, Paco?
Well, just want to reiterate the website, cbp.gov, going to the careers tab, and, of course, going to the veterans page for those who are in the military and more so your audience that we're probably listening to us, at least we're hoping that they're listening to us today, and just letting them know there's tons of possibilities within Customs and Border Protection, like Ben was talking about, internationally as well. There's pretty much sky's the limit because we are still an emerging agency. So this is something that every day is a learning curve. There are things and changes at almost on a daily basis, even in our application process.
Wonderful. Teresa, Paco, Keith, thank you so much for your service for our nation. And hey, folks, the salaries are great as well. Listen, you can share this. A podcast will be up, AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher.com, and visit us on Facebook, American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Ben.